one thing that I'll even tell clients or friends that ask me a similar question about this is, you know, they say, boy, it just seems so risky to go on your own, to be an entrepreneur. And, you know, there's so much risk involved. And that could be true on one hand, but I say, you know what? It's also kind of risky to stay in a job that maybe you don't love. And really, at the end of the day, your employer calls the shots.
Hi, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. On the show, you get my conversations with peak-performing thought leaders, creatives, and entrepreneurs. We explore how you can innovate through creativity, compassion, and collaboration. I believe that innovation combined with compassion and creative thinking can save the world, and I aim to bring you ways you can do it too. If you're enjoying the show, I'd be super grateful if you could support it by buying me a cup of coffee. You can buy me a cuppa at buymeacoffee.com/IsoldeT. And now, let's get on with the show. Hey there, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. I am so happy that you're here, and I'm really honored and happy to have this gentleman here on the show today. And there are myriad reasons, one of which is we've both been students in the same classes. So you're going to hear us probably giggle about certain things. Mike Kim, Lauren Davis, if you're listening, you know we're talking about you. Chris Niemeyer helps business owners design a business lifestyle they love by working smarter, not harder. As a business advisor and consultant, Chris's Freedom Business System, you know I love that already, helps you work in your sweet spot so you work less, make more, and spend more time with your loved ones. For years, Chris ran his first multi-million dollar company mostly alone. When he became a father, he systematized, hired, and raised up a team to run his business so he could be more engaged at home and travel with his family. Nowadays, you're going to find him coaching and consulting other entrepreneurs how to work smarter, not harder, by systematizing your business. I need all the help I can get with that, so I'm really excited to talk to Chris about it. Chris is a family man to the core and is likely with his wife and four young kids at a beach in Florida or coaching their sports activities when not traveling the world together. Wow, Chris, thank you so much for being here. Welcome.
Isolde, thank you. It is a pleasure. You have some amazing guests, and I have listened. You are just a great communicator and interviewer. So I'm just excited to be here. Thank you again for the opportunity.
Oh, it's my pleasure. My pleasure. I appreciate your kind words. It's very sweet. I want to jump into something that you said, and I adore it. You said that you believe that we were all created for a purpose and we need to get realigned to that. I would love to hear from you what you mean. First of all, we were all created for a purpose. And what purpose would that be? Is it individual or is it something that's bigger than one individual person? And how do we get realigned to our purpose? What's the process someone would go through to be able to do that?
Yeah, great question. Well, and I am going to speak through and kind of talk through, I guess, my lens of faith. So I just believe that there's a greater purpose that we all have. And so I think that regardless of your belief system or whatever, we're here for a reason. And there's those kind of three existential questions that I like to talk about of like, who am I? Why am I here? And where am I going? Mm. And I think sitting with those questions actually frequently, you know, whether that's on an annual basis, if you're kind of a planner and it's like, okay, turn of the calendar year is about to happen. What have I learned this year? You know, what am I good at? What am I interested in? And how can I apply that toward a purpose here on this earth to serve others? Mm-hmm. So I've just been able to take action on that over the years. And let me tell you, and we can talk about a story about this, but it's not always been pretty. And I've misaligned in seasons too and had to kind of get back into that. So I'm a huge fan of just finding your purpose and living that out.
I'm taking all that in for a second. It's so interesting to hear you say that you're a fan of finding your purpose and living it out, because I know that there are a lot of people out there who they live their lives, they do their work, and they perhaps watch Jeopardy. And this is not insulting Jeopardy, right? I love Jeopardy. But the point is that it sounds to me like you're talking something that that is a calling that's bigger than the day-to-day stuff of life. And I'm wondering what the process is. What is that that you go, is it a dissatisfaction? Like, I don't want to watch Jeopardy tonight. Instead, I want to go out and change the world or whatever. What happens to someone when they get to that place of either doing that assessment like you do or finding that they're perhaps dissatisfied with their status quo and want to change it? What would you expect someone to be going through at that moment?
Well, I guess if I may, then let me just share a personal experience.
Sure.
There's probably your listeners here and others that have these kind of stories. And sometimes, frankly, we don't want to talk about them, but I've just been okay to be more open about it. So my first career back in my early 20s, of all things, was in the political world.
Oh, wow.
Which is frankly, in our political climate, embarrassing to say these days. But you know, at an early age, I got thrown into leading the largest political action committee in Southern California. And so I was around all these, you know, movers and shakers and big business people and had access to, you know, congressmen and all this stuff as an early, you know, 20 something. It was a fascinating experience. And I learned a little bit about that whole world for a few years there, but it was also never ending. It was one of those, if you remember the BlackBerry, right? We're 24/7 connected to the BlackBerry.
Oh yes.
It'd be iPhone today, but yeah, these are early years. So it was just this kind of frenetic pace. You know, we were identifying candidates to run for office, fundraising for them, doing some lobbying. It was a never ending cycle. And I just remember this particular evening, and it's just one that you'll never forget, right? Is I'm just considering just the pace of life. By the way, we had gotten married early on as a couple. And so my wife had gone back to school and we were just living this fast paced life. And there was this particular evening where I'm just driving home. This is from downtown San Diego, you know, city skyline is in the background in my rearview mirror. And I'm driving up, North San Diego, right near the Miramar Air Force Base. There's these fighter jets, and all these, you know, brave pilots going by. It's where they film part of Top Gun, right? And I'm just thinking about, man, what it must be like to be one of them. And they're just their bravery and no limits and all this stuff. And I'm reflecting on just I'm feeling kind of boxed in and running ragged, you know, and just am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? And a song comes on the radio. I'm listening to the radio. A song comes on the radio. And it's by a band called Switchfoot. And its lyrics start singing out over the radio. It says, "This is your life. Are you who you want to be? This is your life. Is it everything you dreamed that it would be?" And, you know, I don't know how God speaks to people, but sometimes maybe it's in different ways. He's spoken through donkeys before. To me, he was speaking through the radio that day.
All right.
And I just remember pondering those words and then starting to just literally cry out saying, this is not the life I meant to live. This is not in alignment with who I am and my values. I found myself, you know, compromising in certain situations in that political world. And I literally had to pull over to the side of the road because I had to wipe the tears from my eyes because I couldn't see. And it was that evening when I waited for my wife to get home that I said, you know, honey, things have got to change. We've got to get back to I have misaligned my life, and let's get back to what we're supposed to do and who we are. And literally that night, Isolde, this is when we started this kind of process. We, on the back of a napkin, we started listing out the things. What are we interested in? You know, what do we study? What are we, you know, decent, good at? Where do we want to go? What just motivates us and fuels us? And that was the start of my first kind of entrepreneurial journey. Again, just realigning. So I think there's people that have those stories where they either hit rock bottom or they realize, I've watched too many Jeopardies, in your example. I need to get off the couch and do something.
Yeah, it is interesting that what you just said, that you went, okay, what am I good at? What do I love? What are the things that bring me joy? And it took a huge amount of self-awareness, I think, to be able to do that, that you realized something had to change, but then you had that, okay, let me step back and figure out what that is. And so when you did that, when you were in that space and you and your wife, and it's wonderful that she was there with you, you know, that she supported these changes that you wanted to make. what was the next step? How did you go from I work in politics and I'm not happy to the Chris I'm talking to today, who is seems to be super happy and you're doing your own entrepreneurial journey all the way to today? How did that happen?
Yeah, so literally taking that first list that we created, alongside that list, we had a values list and kind of what we anticipated for the next 5 years of our life as well. So really kind of vision casting too. Mm-hmm. And going from a young married couple to, hey, we want to have kids. And if we want to have kids and raise these kids intentionally and well, what's that going to look like? And what is our time availability with them? So we outlined, I want to have a business that if she chooses to, she can stay home and raise the kids. And so I began literally that next week approaching some of my mentors and saying, hey, I'm making a pretty big decision here, but I'm going to leave this political world. And what are your thoughts? And a few of them in the same week gave very similar recommendations. And they said, Chris, you know, you're the kind of guy that you need to own and operate your own company. You need to find out what it is you're passionate about. What is you're good at? So taking that list that we did and something bubbled to the top at that point in our lives. This is back in 2006. And my wife had worked for travel companies in the past. So she was engaged with that. We love to travel. We also had background in missions and kind of giving back to the community and the world. And so missions and travel, we married together and took my business experience and kind of her marketing and that awareness of that area. And that was our first business. It was Mission Travel. We still own it to this day. Just the travel coordination and all that comes with these amazing trips that people take around the world to make the world a better place, to give back. And so that was the foundation of our journey. And it was one where, hey, it's a home-based business. I'm working from my laptop. I can choose, you know, when I want to take a quick break to play with the kids or not. And so that was for us kind of how we started that next step.
Mm. I love that you're location independent. That's really cool. I feel like I'm dancing around a question that I want to ask, and I'm not quite sure how to ask it. You went from being someone who had a job, who was working for others, to you know, you shifted to having your own business. What was that like? This is the innovative mindset. How did you innovate? What did you do after the first business that you started to get you okay with it? Because the thing that concerns me, honestly, is that there are a lot of people who think that they could be entrepreneurs, but actually they might not be well suited for it. Or there are a lot of people who are well suited to be entrepreneurs, but they are staying sort of stuck in a job because they might be nervous or scared. How do you tell what is the best way for your mindset to shift in order to be able to do what you've done?
Yeah, great question. And some complexities there too. But, you know, one thing that I'll even tell clients or friends that ask me a similar question about this is, you know, they say, boy, it just seems so risky to go on your own, to be an entrepreneur. And, you know, there's so much risk involved. And that could be true on one hand. But I say, you know what, it's also kind of risky to stay in a job that maybe you don't love. And really, at the end of the day, your employer calls the shots. Your employer or your market or your industry is the one that is deciding, will you have a job or not? Mm-hmm. To me, that's risky because you don't have control. You don't have the power to make and pivot when an industry shifts or something happens. As an entrepreneur, we have that ability and that maneuverability to tick and tack and zig and zag, right? Mm. And so I think there's that awareness that it's like, well, I feel comfortable and safe in this job, but am I really? And I think that's a big step to just have some people understand is entrepreneurship, while it might sound risky, for me, it's pretty exhilarating because you have quite a bit of control over how things go. And I think that's a big mindset shift that people need to take.
Hmm. There's something so fascinating about that. I don't know if you know who Tom Peters is. He's an author. He wrote in Search of Excellence. He's sort of a leadership guru. One of the things that he says is that the leader's job is to support the people they're leading so that they can shine. And so if you're an entrepreneur and you're the owner of the business, how do you reconcile this notion that you just stated about you know, you have a lot of control to, I guess, hiring or developing the team that will help the business, but also that you can support so that they shine? Does that sound, I hope that question makes any sort of sense, because it's a complicated one.
Yeah, no, it is. And there's a lot to unpack there. I think, you know, predominantly in our culture, you know, perhaps, and maybe worldwide, there are just a lot of unsatisfied employees because they don't have the right kind of leaders, whether that's the manager or the CEO or the C-suite folks. A lot of people they're just punching a clock. And so they're not in satisfaction or alignment with their job. But there are those great exceptions of leaders who say, let's make sure that everyone here feels they've got a purpose, they've got a role. You know, starting as an entrepreneur, especially as a solopreneur to start with, like a lot of us, we're the ones wearing all those hats, right? We're the salesperson, we're the founder, we're the, you know, chief marketing officer, we're the finance bookkeeper, we're, you know, janitor, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. As I explained to my coaching clients, a lot of those hats are uncomfortable. A lot of those hats, frankly, don't fit because you're supposed to be wearing maybe one, maybe two hats, roles in general. And there's other great people that fit those other roles with their own abilities and skill sets. And so it's your job as the leader, as the entrepreneur, to bring in those right people. And I got to that point, you know, years after Mission Travel, when I was that solopreneur who was busy doing it all, and then realized, like, you know what, in order to really scale this and keep my sanity, frankly, I needed to hire the right people who are gifted, talented, and motivated in those areas. Mm-hmm. But does that help answer that question a bit?
It does. It's just, you know, I follow Gary Vaynerchuk, I follow Tim Ferriss, and the things that they say are very similar to what you just said, that you have to hire the right people. And Gary Vaynerchuk goes so far as to say, you know, hire fast and fire fast, right? Yeah. So that if it's not the right person, then no harm, no foul, you've had your 90 days, you're out. And that sounds kind of harsh, but that's kind of, it looks like what he does or what he used to do. I don't know if that's what he does still with VaynerMedia. So what is your thought on that notion? How do you find the right people so that you can eventually sort of delegate and systematize your business so that you can play to your strengths?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of common answers there in terms of making sure that there's an alignment with various tests or assessments or programs that, you know, to kind of screen and vet employees. Mm-hmm. And I think those are good. And I use a lot of those, you know, everything from Myers-Briggs and DISCs and all those kind of assessments that we probably hear about in the workforce. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, I have a lot of things in the interview process too, where it's like, tell me what you would do in this situation, you know, and just give them a lot of like these open-ended questions to mm-hmm. really kind of understand their mindset, who they are, who they're coming from. You know, they're joining you in a different culture too. And so you need to make sure that the culture is a good fit. Mm-hmm. You know, with my travel company, it's all work from home. I have employees that are scattered across the country. So I need to make sure that if you're coming from a regular brick and mortar, you know, retail store down the street, that you're going to be comfortable working really kind of isolated. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got certain chat features and video and all that kind of stuff, but at the end of the day, you're kind of isolated. And how are you with your time? And so just asking some of those questions about some of those things to ensure that it is a good fit. You know, resumes, assessments, that all helps, but sometimes just those really qualified, open-ended questions can spur some dialogue and maybe raise some flags as well.
Yeah, I can imagine that notion of sort of disseminating, figuring out who is right for a role and who might not be right would be, you know, it is important. And it's also, it seems to me that your sort of perspective, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm just sort of putting words in your mouth, but your perspective seems to be that you can't do it all and you shouldn't do it all, right? Mm. In building or running your business. So if that's the case, if you can't do it all, how do you get to that mindset shift? We're going to be talking about shifts a lot, I guess. How do you get to that mindset shift that makes you go, okay, for me personally, I'm just accounting. I want to run away screaming every time I have to do it. So if that's the case, how do I, I'll be the test subject here. How do I do that? How do I let go of the need to do it all, A? And how do I assess someone in something I'm not good at? Like if I were to hire an accountant and I'm not good at it, how do you know as a leader? How do you know if you're not good at the thing that you're trying to hire for? What do you need to do in order to make sure that you will find the right people?
Yeah, great question. So from the mindset perspective, I think it's just understanding too that, again, back to that hat analogy of all that you're having to do and all the hats you're wearing in your business, understanding and recognizing I don't have to wear them all. In fact, I shouldn't wear them all. If my business is going to grow and scale to where I want it to be, and for me to just work in my sweet spot, I've got to delegate. I've got to let other people do that. And that's one thing. I mean, just taking a look at your business and go, if you have to show up every day, day in, day out, you know, hour by hour, doing the routine maintenance tasks that you're doing in your business, I hate to tell you, but you don't really have a business. You have a job and you've got multiple jobs, right?
many hats, right?
Many hats. Yes. And so you've got to understand that, you know, if I want to make this a business, things need to change. And gosh, if we have time, and another story that was really foundational for my business to pivot and to shift in a big way was that realization. Because I mentioned, you know, we started our business without kids and then now we have four. Well, I remember when we got pregnant, right? My wife and we were still in the business and she was like, okay, I'm pregnant. I'm having this baby. This business is your baby now. So I'm running it, you know? And I just remember being so excited to be a dad for the first time. You know, we'd waited several years to have kids and just eager to meet him, to bond with him. And so when that first baby came, I mean, I was pretty darn involved. I mean, really to like the point of like, you know, eye roll here, because it was like, you know, the baby would get up in the middle of the night and cry and need to be fed. And I'm like, you know, flipping the light on, honey, I'll get him from the crib and I'll bring him to you and I'll rub your back and we'll fight over who gets to do the diapers and, you know, all that stuff. And I really felt a close bond, you know, with him at that time. Well, fast forward a couple of years later. Okay, our business had grown substantially. We had scaled a bit more, but I was still really wearing too many hats. I was doing too many of those roles. Bookkeeping, like you just said, I was still doing some bookkeeping at the time. Right. And just kind of going, oh my gosh, if I'm not at my desk or on the phone, like business isn't getting done. Well, son number two comes around and I'm just busy and I need the sleep. And so, you know, maybe I was maybe useful the first few nights or week, but it quickly turned into, you know, eyes are closed in the middle of the night, honey, the baby's crying. Can you go get him? I'm gonna roll over and go back to bed. Well, something happened and it's rocked us to the core. 2 months into his birth, and I'm not feeling the bond with him because I'm not around him and doing all this stuff. My brother and sister-in-law were coming down to spend the weekend and get to meet Noah for the first time. And we're waiting up by the fire for him, and they call in and say, hey, you know what? We're gonna be late. Just go to bed and we'll catch up with you guys in the morning when we get there. And so we threw a few extra logs on the fire, head upstairs, put Noah down in his crib and go to sleep. Well, in the middle of the night, about 1 o'clock in the morning, we get this loud knock on our bedroom door. And seconds later, my brother bursts in the door and says, Chris, your house is on fire, get out. And, you know, we're just bewildered. I'm not sure what's going on. And my sister-in-law comes in, grabs Noah out of his crib, meeting him for the first time. And we throw on some blankets and jackets and rush out of the house. And sure enough, our roof was on fire. And, you know, we call the fire department. They were able to come pretty quickly and extinguish the fire. Well, the next morning when I go back to the house to meet the fire chief and our insurance adjuster. And as he brings us in the house and starts assessing the damage and talking about what they've discovered, we begin walking upstairs. And I'm getting goosebumps now, but just, I'll never forget that feeling of when he flung the door open and he's talking and we look up and there's a big gaping hole in the ceiling and you can see right to the sky. And as he's talking, I look down and right down there is our son's crib that was crushed and with charcoal. And he's describing that this is the first place that the structure fell.
Wow.
And I just remember being cut to the core and going, I almost lost my son, who I didn't even feel a great bond with at that time. And I remember driving back to the hotel we were staying and just processing all that and realizing, Chris, some things have to change in your business. You just have a job and multiple jobs. And so you've got to get the right people to come in and help you out. And that was a really pivotal time for us to make some big adjustments, make some big hires. And I remember going into that hotel room and my wife didn't know any of this at the time. I had to tell her all about that circumstance later, but I just remember grabbing Noah in my arms. He's 2 months old and just kissing his little bald head and going, things are going to be different. And that was just the start of a new chapter in our business, a new chapter in our life where, you know, I wanted to be a super present father. I didn't care what the business was going to do or how it was going to scale. I just wanted to be engaged and active as a daddy. That was my biggest role in the most comfortable hat that I wanted to wear and knew that everything else would work itself out. So for me, that's just one of those example stories of going, you have to get to a point where you realize those roles aren't going to work and you've got to find the right people to get engaged with them. So for what it's worth, I don't know if that answers fully your question, but that was a foundational time to have that shift in the business mindset.
Oh, well, you answered 1,000 questions there. I don't think it was just one. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm so glad that Noah and all of you were, you know, that you were all okay. Wow. Yeah. I just want to honor that for a second. I'm just so glad that you
Thank you.
Wow. It's, you know, and it's funny because the notion of being purpose driven or purpose led, you know, it's very clear to me that you have that you are purpose driven, and work from that truth, obviously. And so to bring it back to application, to sort of being practical, when you had that realization, when you realized that being a daddy was the most important thing, being a dad, a husband, a family member, how did you take that into your business and systematize it and make it so that you could focus the bulk of your energy on your family?
Yeah. Yeah. And I use this in how I lead coaching clients now too, that are entrepreneurs that want to get out of their grind like I was. Mm-hmm. And I give this analogy that, you know, you need to take a look at your business as a big skyscraper. So just pick a skyscraper from your, you know, nearest downtown and look at that building and go, that building represents my business. And every floor on that building represents a department, a function of your business. So on one level, you've got your sales, and one level, you got customer service, one level, you got finance or HR, whatever it is for your business. Where do you want your suite to be? Which level, which floor, where do you want your sweet spot to be? And to understand, you need to work in that realm. And you can take the proverbial elevator and, you know, go back and forth every once in a while and check in on the sales team or the marketing team or whatever, but you need to be in your sweet spot. And so just identifying that, to take a look at your business from a 30,000 foot view and go, what are the key components of my business? And then practically speaking, it's looking at, okay, what is still inside my head, which is usually the case for founders and CEOs. There's so much in your head that you've never documented, that you've never systematized or put a standard operating procedure in place. And so I remember literally after that whole fire experience going, okay, I need to do a really much better job of documenting everything that I do in my day. And what are the top 10 procedures or SOPs I need to put in place? So literally that's what I did. I mean, for those next few weeks, I'm logging time I'm taking on calls or emails or bookkeeping, getting back to that, all those things where I'm like, you know what? I need to start training people and considering if I want to get a higher director of operations, if I want a higher director of sales, what is it that I'm doing now that I can document and explain to them? And then they can add even more from there. So that's just a very practical thing that anyone can do is in terms of documenting their time mm-hmm. and how they're spending it and then getting the systems in place for them.
Mm. Yeah, I use something called Toggle Track, which allows me to mm-hmm. document exactly what I'm working on, because otherwise I personally, my brain, the way it works, I wouldn't know, I wouldn't remember. So I've just spent 45 minutes on X. that's yeah. because otherwise I, you know, the way my brain works. So how do we do that? If I'm an entrepreneur and if I want to do this systematization, wow, that's a long word. If I want to systematize, again, I'm not good at it. My brain doesn't work that way or whatever it is. Do you have any guidance, any materials, anything that you would be willing to share that someone would go, oh, yeah, I need to know X in order to be able to do Y? Is there anything that you can recommend? Any books that you've read, anything like that, that you would be willing to share?
Yeah, let me think about the book's perspective. But you know, one of the things that we instead of just logging and documenting stuff too is really understanding what are the resources that you need mm-hmm. in terms of software or hardware, whatever your business might look like. You know, what checklists do you need in your business to show someone and document kind of the process and procedures that you go through. You know, like I had to develop call scripts. I had a very certain way of doing things with certain prospective clients mm-hmm. or in the process, right, of a sale. And so just what are some of the scripts or the email templates, right? We developed a whole library of email templates because we realized if you're sending the same kind of email more than twice, just put it as a template or as a canned response.
Right.
You know, so things like that, process flows are good. I use a lot of tools like Loom is an example of a video recording and messaging where you can document what you're doing in terms of screen flow. So mm-hmm. if I'm trying to just describe to an employee, hey, here's how I do this, or even to a VA, I use this a lot now with virtual assistants. If I'm going to give a project, I'll start that out and just hit record on my screen, talk into the mic, process what I'm doing in my own mind out loud to them, and then take it from there. So those are just little tips and tricks to use.
I love that. I love that notion of here's exactly what you would do. And it would be something that relates to other types of professional services and businesses and nonprofits and all of that. It sounds like these are universally applicable. Is that the case, do you think? Or do you think that there are some things in the sort of more for-profit realm that would not relate well to the nonprofit realm?
No, I think they would. I mean, any business, profit or nonprofit, has certain functions, right? They have certain processes, a way of doing things. Mm-hmm. I think really, if you peel back the onion, a system or systemization or whatever that mouthful is, it's really just a way of doing things. And anyone, whether you're, you know, a child, a parent, a CEO, you have a way of doing things. Mm-hmm. So that can apply to just about anything in any industry.
Yeah, I wonder about that. I mean, I work a lot in the space of people who are doing As I said, social impact and environmental impact. I worked at NASA for over 20 years. What can I say? It it doesn't go away. And so if that's the case, like someone like me or someone who's, you know, working for an animal shelter and all of that, are there ways, do you think, for them to systematize as well to make it so that, for example, they could do more rescues or things like that? Or again, do you think that something that's very nonprofit, that's very almost volunteer driven, would be able to do that? And how do you handle, if you're working on this, how do you handle people who are VAs? How do you handle people who are volunteers? How does that work? If you know.
Yeah, no, I think you do. I mean, whether you're NASA or whomever you're working for, right? There's a way of doing things. And so let's just say you're a volunteer and you're working for rescues. You have a way of doing something when you get that call or that lead that there's an opportunity. Mm-hmm. What do you do next? You know, who do you call? How do you vet if that's an actual real life opportunity? What are the metrics or whatever that might look like in terms of the industry language, mm-hmm, that's in place for you to say, I've got to make this call or do this or do that? It's kind of like that if then this, mm-hmm, scenario, which there's, you know, technology for now, but how would you do that? Or taking it to an extreme, you know, a pilot has something like 130 point checklist that he's got to tick off before he even turns on the propellers. Mm-hmm. And so that's just a huge, you know, huge safety precautionary, sure, type of checklist. Mm-hmm. But I think anyone, profit or nonprofit, has that ability. And then the second part of your question about, you know, training a VA or checking in or whatever, I'm just a big fan of checking in with people routinely. So whether it's a VA or, you know, I do a lot of real estate deals these days on the side. If I've got a contract to work on a project and it's a, you know, 4 month or 6 month project, in our contract, we actually have something in place where it says, hey, every 2 weeks, we're just gonna have a 5 minute call. Mm. I just want to check in. How's it going? Give me some updates. You know, I do a lot of stuff out of state, so I'm not even near where these projects are going on. But just to hear, here's how things are going, or snap a couple pictures. The same can be done with a VA or an employee, whether they're working, you know, the next desk over or countries away. Those kind of things can be done.
Ah, that gives me such hope for myself.
You can do it.
I certainly hope so. Yeah, I'm at that point, you know, where this podcast requires more help, more work than I can do in you know, in one 24-hour or seven 24-hour periods. So you mentioned something about real estate deals, and we talked a little bit about this before we started recording this chat, that you have gotten into both real estate and cryptocurrency. Can you talk a little bit about that? What does, first of all, cryptocurrency is one of those things that I've read about, and I honestly have no real fundamental idea of what cryptocurrency is. So could you take a second and describe what it is and also what you're doing with it?
Sure. Yeah, this is something I've just been talking a little more openly about here in the past several months, especially on social media. But and I'll answer the first part of that question after. But cryptocurrency really is a digital currency. And so, you know, we're all now used to having in our hands and our phones, we can do just about anything digitally.
Sure.
Right? Whether you want to or not, you have the capability to load your credit cards and check out at the grocery store or, you know, Nordstrom, and it's all done, mm-hmm, digitally. So we're used to that now. And so cryptocurrency and Bitcoin's kind of the gold standard in that people might hear about in headlines, is built on a technology called the blockchain. Mm-hmm. And again, this could be a whole nother episode, but the technicality of the blockchain is just, it's an open sourced ledger of transactions. Mm. And so let's go back to like bookkeeping as an example, because we keep on coming up in this episode for whatever reason.
Because
be by a bookkeeper, a that's CPA. Right.
Because I'm so terrible at it. I keep gnawing away at it. That's what it is.
Right. So let me give this example, right? So in the old days, we had a file cabinet, right? And the file was in our own office, mm-hmm, and we kept the ledger, we kept the books, so to speak, but only we had access to that.
Right.
In the blockchain, and technology, it's all open source out there in the network. We can see exactly what's there. And so I give this example in the previous decade, there was this massive accounting scandal that was by Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo created 3.5 million fake accounts, fake credit card wow. accounts, fake checking accounts, savings accounts, all this stuff. They created that internally in people's names so they can get bonuses and kickbacks and commissions, all this stuff. What? It was exposed.
Wow.
If that were on the blockchain, that couldn't happen. But because it was in-house, they had full control. They had secrecy on it. Mm-hmm. Blockchain provides the transparency. And so, again, there's a lot of complexities to cryptocurrency, but it's just a medium of exchange that can be bought or sold, transferred over if you own it, and you can start using it. People literally now can buy a Tesla with Bitcoin. They can transfer funds into their Starbucks app and buy a coffee with it. So its usage is exponentially being utilized in new ways these days.
Okay. That's very cool. And also immediately I go, what are the governments of different countries going to say about something that does not seem to require their oversight? How does that work?
Yeah, and that's a great question, because I think you're going to see a lot more scrutiny and regulation about this. You know, right now, even just here in this country, whether it's the SEC or the IRS, they're looking at different ways. Is cryptocurrency a currency? Is it an asset? There's ramifications for how they classify that. Mm. In India, there's a bill going through parliament right now to ban cryptocurrency.
Wow.
And so how could that happen? You know, frankly, there's a lot of people in speculation saying they can't really do that because it's not something that's like a physical, you know, thing you can ban. And so there's a whole discussion about what will happen with that.
Wow.
You know, I just got involved because I'm curious. And, you know, back to my mentors 16 years ago, they outlined, they said, Chris, there's kind of three areas of a great way to make a living, make a life, you know, perhaps generational wealth for yourself. And that is, number one was entrepreneurship, you know, owning and operating a company. Number two was real estate and various aspects of that, development or construction business or top realtor. And number three was financial markets, you know, be a hedge fund, be a trader, whatever. They said, and these guys I respected greatly and they were very successful financially anyway. They said the secret though is if you're going to go that first route as a business owner and entrepreneur is to take your profits and dump them in those two other classes as quickly as possible to really kind of grow the three-legged stool of financial wealth and independence. And so I've just followed that advice over the years and become more focused on that recently in terms of just building up a real estate portfolio of rental properties and then crypto I just sort of dabble in and have fun with and trade and invest or speculate in because I like the technology behind it.
Mm. It's so fascinating that the three-legged stool, it, to me, what that does, what made me go, ooh, sit up and take notice is the notion that if you want to have, like you said, independence for you, it seems to be time with your family and mm-hmm. being the best dad you can be. And that's fabulous. And for someone who wants to, for example, like me, we have a nonprofit that mm-hmm. works to stop poachers in Africa, then those kinds of investments, those kinds of activities would go well to free up the time, you know, so that I could focus on those things. So talk to me a little bit about that, if you would. The allocation, because, you know, the way I live is you've got one life, make it count. So for me, I want to see what are the possibilities, right? And so it sounds to me like you are sort of the poster boy for this kind of sort triple threat, if you will. What are your thoughts on that as far as allocating that purpose-driven life? Maybe it's not for business. Maybe it is for you set it up so that you can have your business, have your real estate or cryptocurrency or whatever those things are for each individual person, so that you can then be free to do what else you want to do. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, it gets back to, again, purpose and values too. And so, like you described, each person needs to understand clearly what it is they're focused on. What makes an ideal lifestyle for you? You know, is it involved in some nonprofit activities or things halfway around the world or across the street that's going to fill you up and fill you up your purpose cup, so to speak? Mm-hmm. Again, for me, it's all about family, you know, and being the best husband and father I can be and raising these kids in a way that gives them opportunity and purpose within themselves. Mm. And I'm involved in other things as well and nonprofits and such. But for me, that's my biggest focus in this season of life. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, my youngest is 5, so I've got what, maybe 13, 14 years of of her possibly being under the roof. You know, I don't know how that's an old boomerang effect thing works, but we'll see. We got 4 kids. I'm pretty sure we'll have some kids around for a while. But I think that is my focus, right? And so if that is the focus, and I've been blessed to have some of these business ventures and just taking some of those profits to reinvest, the allocation question then becomes, you know, what's your risk tolerance? What's your, you know, asymmetric risk? So for me, and this gets a little more into the weeds too, but cryptocurrency, for example, is very volatile. And mm-hmm. so the risk reward can be pretty high, but there's some major price fluctuations and swings. And so you're not going to bet the farm. You're not going to put your entire, you know, investment portfolio into something like that. But if you put 2%, 5%, 10%, let's say, and that has the potential to go up 10x or 50x or these crazy values that some people have realized the last couple of years, that can do something pretty mm-hmm. substantial mm-hmm. for your own portfolio and net worth. And so it's, so you have to kind of look at that and evaluate that from a real estate perspective. There's multiple ways to be involved in that, whether you want to be a bit more active like me and finding deals and vetting them and putting offers in or buying cash or whatever. But there's also great, you know, REITs, real estate investment trusts that you can buy from the stock market. And so that's just a question of your own allocation and risk tolerance, I think is the best answer there.
It's a valuable answer because a lot of people think they should be involved in things like this, but maybe they're not well suited for it. You know, that's not their temperament. There, to me, this whole notion of cryptocurrency and you know, they say playing the stock market. It's not playing. It can be actually quite intense. And yet, the way, for example, I live with all of this is don't invest anything you can't afford to lose 100% of, right? So, so that seems to me, I'm very low, I'm risk averse, I guess. And yet, the thing is that within that, when we're talking about this notion of, it comes back, I guess, to self-awareness when we're talking about, you know, what are you prepared to lose and how much are you prepared to risk? And it sounds to me like that goes for everybody, whether or not you're working a job or whether or not you're an entrepreneur, business owner, et cetera. You have to know that about yourself. You have to know what are you prepared to lose and what are you prepared to risk. And so what do you think? How would someone figure that out, what they're prepared to lose and risk?
Boy, that's a complex, probably personal question. Situation for most people, but I guess it boils down to, like you said, do you feel like you can just lose it all and be comfortable with that, or do you feel like, because there's extremes, right? There's people that would bet the farm and be like, okay, well, I'll go save it again and make it up, and that's fine. There's also those that are like, I'm gonna stick this under my mattress because I don't want to lose it.
Right. You know? Right.
So somewhere on the spectrum, we all lie, and so I think just understanding that and taking a look at, let's just say, you know, the whole Wall Street experiment, so to speak, because mm-hmm. really, frankly, it's only been less than 100 years that a normal individual can go and buy a stock.
Sure.
So that whole financial services industry is relatively new. Mm-hmm. And that's what we get pushed all the time. That's mm-hmm. a massive, massive industry. And so, you know, are you comfortable with 7-8% and taking that slow growth approach of it's going to take 40 or 50 years of working or whatever to get to that retirement point? Or are you comfortable maybe taking 5 or 10 or 20% or whatever that might be into these, you know, quote unquote riskier plays. Again, that's a personal decision. You've got to just set with and go, how would I feel if this dropped 50% or whatever? Do you need more money in the mattress or do you need more money over here?
Right. And it's absolutely. And it's interesting. I mean, we're not giving financial advice here. And I have to say that because no, I am not qualified. I am the least qualified person to give financial advice for sure. And yet this is something that I think it behooves us to think about because everybody is looking and assessing, especially this year of COVID, you know, where they are and how they're going to proceed. You know, I know a lot of people, a lot of my guests actually have made significant changes because of the time in, you know, in the pandemic and sort of really think being alone with your thoughts, like you said, being kind of isolated and being alone with your thoughts. So I'm wondering, what were the realizations, if you had any, that you had during that time when you were sort of sequestered, if you will?
Yeah, I think that whole year for a lot of us, right, probably brought on some awareness of, you know, am I financially secure or safe or whatever? I mean, everyone was, you know, losing their job or their company was, you know, frozen for a while or whatever that might be. We all had a lot of fear grip us, and I remember just having to sit with that and go, okay, where are we? Let's just throw everything out there on the table and take a look at that picture. So I think that's something that we can all do and go, okay, what are there changes that need to be made? You know, the savings rate went through the roof there for a while because we were all so like scared and scattered. Oh my gosh, I've been living paycheck to paycheck and, you know, now I need to save up 3 to 6 months like Dave Ramsey says or whatever the case may be. Which is not bad advice, frankly, right? I'm looking outside and I'm looking at squirrels right now. I mean, they sock away their stuff for the winter because they know
right. That
you need to do that. And so I think there's a bit of that personal introspection to go, you know, where are we? Because data in front of you doesn't lie, you know, whether it's your paycheck or your business or your bank accounts or whatever. And what are you more comfortable with? That's always a good place to start.
Mm. Yeah. Again, what are you willing to risk and what are you not willing to risk? Absolutely. Chris, I am so grateful that you took the time to chat with me today. I could keep you for another 4 hours and we could, you know, cause I have many more questions, but, but I know you've got, oh, thank you so much. Yeah. I know you've got kids to get back to. So I want to respect your time. And so I would love it, actually, if you wouldn't mind, I have just a couple more questions, but the big one is, would you mind sharing how, if someone goes, that Chris guy, he knows what he's talking about. I want to go find him on social. Would you mind sharing where someone could find you if they were interested in learning more about what you're doing and how you're doing it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and thank you again. This is really a pleasure. You're a masterful conversation starter, so an interviewer. So I really appreciate the time. But yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Chris Niemeyer. Maybe put that in the links there. Niemeyer's N-I-E. And Facebook, same, and LinkedIn as well. So I'm pretty active on Instagram and Facebook. And then my website is chrisniemeyer.com.
Perfect. And actually, I will put all of this in the show notes, but just so you know, the LinkedIn is actually Niemeyer Chris, and so is Facebook.
Yes.
It's right. Chris Niemeyer on Instagram and LinkedIn. It's Niemeyer Chris, N-I-E-M-E-Y-E-R Chris. And if you don't know how to spell Chris, I'm sorry.
That's right.
Yeah, that one hopefully won't be. I mean, my name is Isolda, and I recently got a piece of snail mail addressed to Izimbra, and I have no idea how they got from Isolda to Izimbra, but I thought that was really amusing. Anyway, so it was very strange. So I want to thank you, and I have just one more question. It's a question I ask everybody who comes on the show. And it's a silly question, but I find that it yields some poignant answers. And the question is this. If you had an airplane that could skywrite anything for the whole world to see, what would you say?
Mine would be live on purpose. Live on purpose.
I
And I
love
think that would
that.
help people understand, or at least to ask themselves, what does that mean? And am I?
That's fabulous. I love it. That's so succinct. I love it, love it, love it. Thank you, Chris, once again for being here. I really appreciate it. I'm so grateful. I learned so much just talking with you. And I'm sure if you're listening, you learned a lot from this as well. And you need to go find Chris Niemeyer on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, and on his website. See what he's up to, because obviously he's doing some really cool stuff. This is Isolde Trachtenberg for the Innovative Mindset Podcast. If you're liking what you hear, do me a favor. Go to Apple Podcasts, rate and review. Tell me what you're thinking. I'd love to hear about it. Until next time, once again, this is Isolde Trachtenberg reminding you to listen, learn, laugh, and love a whole lot. Thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. Please subscribe to the podcast if you're new. And if you like what you're hearing, please review it and rate it and let other people know. And if you'd like to be a sponsor of the show, I'd love to meet you on patreon.com/innovativemindset. I also have lots of exclusive goodies to share just with the show's supporters there. Today's episode was produced by Isolde Trachtenberg and is copyright 2021. As always, please remember this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Past performance does not guarantee future results, although we can always hope. Until next time, keep living in your innovative mindset.